This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Julian Ng, and with me is Lin Ma. This is Pressing Matters, the show that goes behind the headlines, where we speak to members of the press on the stories. Today, joining us is P. Gunasekaram, an independent business analyst, and we'll be talking about your article, Guna, 10 Unlikable Things About Mahathir. Have you gotten feedback that perhaps you may be slightly anti-Mahathir?
I think sometimes even in discussions with friends, that comes up. Yeah. So, but for me, it's a matter of whether he's doing right or wrong. No. If I think he's doing wrong, then I'm anti-Mahathir. If I think he's doing right, then I am pro. No.
Yes, so, exactly.
But I'm finding very few things to support him about these days. You know?
So you've come up with a preamble to this article, 10 things that you dislike about Mahathir, which is that Nurul Izzah interview that she gave with Singapore Straits Times. And Nurul Izzah actually said that Mahathir is not giving enough room for the middle ground, attracting the moderates and widening, appealing to the middle. Instead, he has gone to one extreme, which is to endear himself or the government more to along racial lines.
Yep, I think if you look at the previous thing that Harappan's entire campaign promise was along the lines that everybody becomes inclusive, and everyone is included in development, and the help that the government gives to everyone is needs based rather than on along racial lines. So Mahathir clearly has moved away from that. He's going back to the old theme of the Malay agenda and promoting the Malays in business and distributing wealth and so on.
And what do you think of Nurul Izzah's decision to resign? I mean, on the one hand, it is good to see a politician so upholding her principles, but it must also be a real loss for the coalition to lose such a strong politician.
Sure, but perhaps she thinks that in the current environment, I can't speak for her, but perhaps she thinks that there's not much that can be done. And I think in this era where principle seems to be thrown overboard left, right, and center, it's nice to see that somebody is standing up for principles and is prepared to move out of government to show that they are in disagreement with some key things that the government is doing. You know, perhaps if more ministers and things like that spoke up in cabinet meetings and did not give, say, Mahathir a free hand to do whatever he wanted to do, then things may not be so bad. You know?
So do you think
at least there's one person who's doing this.
Yeah. Do you think that Nurul Izzah is priming herself up for the next election or some future election where she will either, you know, put herself up for prime ministership or forming a new party to attract the young, the millennials?
I think that's highly unlikely. So probably what she might want to do, I mean, just looking at it rationally, PKR is a party, you know, and her father is the one who founded PKR and who's the one who's leading PKR at the moment. So I think it's highly likely she will leave PKR itself. But she is refusing to have anything to do with the current Harappan government, you know? Not so much PKR as a Harappan, which does not seem to do enough in terms of the reforms that it promised. And that, I suppose, is fair. She's entitled to it. I don't think you can write her off, as a future up-and-coming leader, although it'll be a while before she becomes prime minister, for instance, if ever she does. You know?
Earlier you mentioned that Pakatan Harapan under Mahathir seems to be shifting back towards like highlighting the Malay agenda. And it's something, this kind of holdover from the previous rule is something that you also highlighted, his habit of not consulting with other members of the coalition. But what's happening, give us some insight into what's happening behind the scenes perhaps. Like, one would have anticipated that there would be more pushback from other members of the coalition.
Yep, I think everybody, including Daim Zainuddin in a recent interview with The Star, has said that Anwar will succeed Mahathir as a prime minister. So perhaps the feeling among the coalition members is that let's just wait for this to happen, you know, and then we can do the changes, not rock the boat and jeopardize Anwar's succession to become prime minister. So that could be the reason why they are not pushing back as much as they might otherwise, you see. But I think if there is any kind of clear indication that Anwar is not going to succeed Mahathir, then I think there will be a huge amount of pushback, especially among PKR members. You know?
Okay, so looking at your listicle, 10 unlikable things about Dr. Mahathir, number one is that without Mahathir, the elections would not have been won. I think that you have talked about this before, but I think this is an important point to highlight, right?
Okay, this is what his supporters are very fond of saying to justify the kind of power that he exercises over the coalition. You know? But, you know, at the end of the day, Mahathir's party, Bersatu or Pribumi, I think we'll just use the term Bersatu, won only 13 parliamentary seats. You know? 13 out of 52 that they contested for a win rate of only 25%, which is much lower than the other parties. You know, the DAP had more than a 90% win rate in Peninsula Malaysia. PKR had more than an 80% win rate. And even Amana had a better win rate than Bersatu. So when DAP has won, say, 42 seats and PKR has won 47 seats at the end of the elections, how can you say that Mahathir won the elections? I mean, when his party, which contested more seats than anybody else in Peninsular Malaysia, did so abysmally. So it is ridiculous to say that he won the elections with only 13 seats. You know, PKR won 47 seats. They won the elections much more than Mahathir did, you know. So it's simple as that.
You can just as lightly say that as well as the other thing, right, which is that Mahathir won the elections.
And yet, so despite the fact that Bersatu has only 13 seats, they do have, as you've highlighted, a disproportionate number of members in key cabinet positions. But it doesn't seem like that's captured much of the public discussion since G14.
I think in the early days, even the DAP was very fond of saying prime ministerial prerogative because Lim Guan Eng got the finance minister's position and that elated them. And I think if you go back, you remember that there was a two-stage announcement of the cabinet. First, 10 key members were appointed. And then PKR basically walked out of that meeting because the appointment of the finance minister was not discussed. I think it was only after the intervention of Anwar Ibrahim that they came back to the table. So very early on itself, the coalition agreement was almost derailed by a prime minister who was acting as if he had the majority of seats within the coalition, which he did not. He had only 13 seats, which is between one-third to one-quarter of the seats that PKR had, you know.
You're listening to Pressing Matters, and today we have P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst, and we're talking about his article on Malaysia Kini, 10 Unlikable Things About Dr. Mahathir. We'll be back with more after this, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. Julian and Lynn here with you, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that goes behind the headlines. Today we have P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst, and we're discussing his article on the Malaysia Kini website, 10 Unlikable Things About Dr. Mahathir. Number four on the list, Guna, is Mahathir brought back Dime, undermining the cabinet. And also, in connection to this, Dime has been making a lot of statements, including the fact that he said that we should enhance the capital markets, saying that more GLCs should be listed. I'm sure that you feel that this is very ominous, right?
It depends, you know. There is talk in the market about certain stakes in GLCs being given over to private individuals, not given over, but being bought over by private individuals. So if there is such an exercise, then it has got to be very carefully done, and to make sure that the assets are not sold at lower prices than what it can get. But if you look at the market cap of the GLCs, there are no individuals to actually take control of these things. And some of them, you cannot pass it over to individuals because of regulations which do not permit these things, such as banking sector.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think individuals can only can't accumulate more than a 5% stake, I believe, or it could be.
But all the banks are listed already except for Bank Negara. That's yeah. a joke, by the way. Yeah. but then other GLCs that are not listed.
Yes,
that's not a good. Is that good policy to have more listed GLCs?
I think it is okay because it takes in some gets some revenue for the government because the stake in some of the government companies can be pared down. But it depends on which companies they are and at what and crucially at what price they are going to be, you know, the share stakes are going to be divested. So if you divest, you don't need to give it to individuals. You can just divest it to the general public, you know, and whoever wants has the means to buy it, they can buy it from there. Or unit trust can take up the stakes, you know.
And actually, what do you think of the rationale that the CEP was established initially to promote investor confidence in Malaysia, kind of to tide the country over since there wasn't a cabinet yet at the time?
I don't believe that. I think basically Mahathir wanted policy to be run by somebody whom he trusted, you know. So, and because it was a way of bypassing the coalition and putting the power in a person whom Mahathir trusted, you know, because I think the right thing to have done is to have a committee which is at least nominally headed by, say, four or five ministers who are responsible for economic policy making, you know. And then from there, you could have a secretariat to actually come up with a plan. So that way, there is greater inclusion of the cabinet in that instead of a CEP, you know. And at the end of the day, even the CEP is not being made public, and that is really bad, you know. Because I mean, even Dime says it should be made public, and so does Jomo. So why does Mahathir keep on insisting that there is something in this CEP which cannot be made public? You know? So is it because he wants to control the economy? You know, so that those kind of questions arise. Eh? And if he thinks that there are sensitive things, you can just black it out and then still still release the report. You know? So
exactly.
What's the problem?
Yeah, that was the comment from our guest earlier this morning from the CIP as well. But you know, going back to Dime, you think that his involvement in any form of involvement within the government is particularly egregious. Why is that?
I think basically you have to remember that Dime has always been in business. I think during his time as finance minister, he put his business under trust or something like that. But he is very much involved in business. He's a major businessman in the country. He's got connections with a lot of businessmen, and therefore there will be many situations which arise where he is very, very conflicted in business decisions. You know? So, for instance, if you take, say, the development of the Bukit Kiara land, you know, if he's negotiating anything there, and he has actually met with those people who are involved in the Bukit Kiara land, then it goes back to his own personal relationship with some of these people who are involved. You know?
Yeah, and twist their arms.
So another thing that you also highlighted in your article, it's number 8 on the list, is that Mahathir has accepted defectors from UMNO, particularly into Bersatu. And so this has been something of a topic of contention within the Pakatan Harapan government, right? And so what is the sentiment like amongst the broader component parties? What's the rationale that they've been given for this acceptance?
Okay, both PKR as well as the AP have publicly expressed their unhappiness at accepting UMNO defectors. You know, so many of them are MPs. And these MPs, I think if you remember the reports that were circulating at that time, every UMNO division actually had donations from 1MDB funds. You know? So these were the reports that were made. So these guys may well be linked with 1MDB and receiving money which effectively came from 1MDB. So how can you accept these guys into it, even if you think that party hopping is reasonable, it is not. You know?
Has it been proven though that the MPs were on the take as far as 1MDB was concerned?
The reports at that time, which were circulating, is that every division got money from the 1MDB funds. You know? So those are the kind of things that you have to think about. You know, and these guys did not do anything about ousting Najib when it became very obvious that he had a lot of money from one NBB went into his personal account. Isn't it? There was not even a pipsqueak from these guys. So how can you accept them in here? You know, and in effect, morally and ethically, and perhaps not legally, the party hopping is extremely abhorrent. The only reason that Mahathir wants this is because he knows he's got too few people seats at only 13 seats. And he's actually pilfering these people from the other parties to boost his own numbers. So certainly PKR and DAP are going to be very unhappy with that.
Okay,
and,
but sorry to cut you there, but sure. There is a lot of means to an argument out there. Now, if these party hoppers can deliver a two-thirds majority to Pakatan Harapan, then the argument goes that Mahathir can then bulldoze a lot of these reform measures
in
Parliament.
Well, did the public give PKR a two-thirds majority? I mean, Harapan a two-thirds majority? They did not. You know? So it was not the intention of the public that they have a two-thirds majority. And I think that may be correct, because giving two-thirds majority to a single party means the constitution can be altered willy-nilly, and perhaps the public does not want that. So to achieve the two-thirds majority by devious means is not on. At the same time, to make many of the changes that it required does not need a two-thirds majority. To repeal the laws that Najib imposed does not require a two-thirds majority. You know, to make many legal changes, you don't need a two-thirds majority. And if you do something very good for the country, perhaps even the opposition might support
might vote
you,
for it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you could maybe appeal to the opposition to come in and approve a two-thirds majority for a constitutional
Correct.
Change if it is absolutely necessary.
Good, now we have one minute left. Any views on Rantau?
I think Rantau will be tough, but it's not impossible for Sitaram to win. If you look at the dynamics in that place, if he has a very solid Indian and Chinese support, say if something between 80 to 90% support for this, then the figures indicate that with a 25% Malay support, he could win. You know? So it's not impossible, but I think the general talk out there is that he will lose. You know?
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And that was P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst. And this was an episode of Pressing Matters. Stay tuned for Enterprise that's coming up next. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.